To the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. And it is going to be mind power. Mind power that's going to enable you to really make happiness a part of your life because you know what? It's built into you. My guest today, Dr. James Bard, has put together a book called Happiness Genes. And on the cover is this delightful happy face that is right there in the middle of the page. How we can unlock the positive potential hidden in our DNA. Dr. Baird, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
It is a delight having you. Your book is quite interesting to read. And I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You have more than 40 years of experience as a graduate engineer, but you also are a man that is very innovative. You've been involved in putting together inventions. But when you were working as an inventor, it's as if that was a catalyst for you to explore some other options. And you decided you were going to research the subject of happiness, and you've been doing so for a number of years. And you, in the process of doing that, ended up with a PhD in natural health and founded the Happiness Ministries, which has enabled you to have some publications like the Happiness Plan, the Modern Christian's Happiness Plan, and some other things. And you also are the chairman of the Chicago chapter of the American Scientific Association. You followed a rather unique patterning to get to the point of putting together a book like that. You also have an associate, Dr. Lori Nadell. And she has her own radio show as a doctorate in psychology and clinical hypnotherapy. How'd the two of you ever get together?
Well, it was just one of those things. You could never have planned it ahead of time.
Well,
I was looking for an editor to come up and work with me and polish my work. I have an engineering background, and so I don't have a journalism background, so the way I talk and the way I write probably is not too acceptable for the majority of the common people. I need somebody that's spoken in modern language. Lori was the person. So I went to the society that she belongs to, American Journalistic Society, and looking for an editor, and she just happened to like the concept of the book. And so that's how it started.
I want to point out some different details that you have right in the foreword of your book, that first we need to shed our image of being helpless victims and be aware, mindfully aware, of who we really are, and that the cells in a human body is equal to the total number of people on 8,000 Earths, which is an awesome number, and each cell in and of itself within our body is a complete world, which when you think about that, that's quite mind-moving, and that we have a central voice physiologically that we perceive as mind and spirit. These are statements that are coming to the forefront more and more as we are evolving in our understanding of the interconnectedness of life and the awe that really we should feel about life because it's so incredible. When you decided to do this, now you've written about happiness before.
Mm-hmm.
What made you prompt yourself to look at it from a genetic angle?
Well, what happened was, as you said before, I've been investigating it for a period of time. And I knew certain things that made you happy and certain things that made you happy for a short time and certain things that make you happy continuously. But the problem was that it all came down to moving some genes around. And then when the Human Genome Project came on board, it then became possible to map the human genome, and the potential of finding genes having to do with happiness become more real. And so I got excited about that, but then I really got excited when epigenetics, the new science, became mainstream, or practically mainstream, because here's a way now of making a genetic change without waiting around for evolution to do it for you.
Now,
and so that those things came together, and that was the impetus for doing this.
Explain to my audience what epigenetics is, in case this is a new word for some of the listeners.
Epigenetics, really simply put, is a study of changes in gene activity that do not involve alterations to the genetic code, but still get passed down to at least one successive generation. In other words, it's making a change, a genetic change, without changing your DNA. Now, we can't change our genes at this point in time anyway, but what we can do through epigenetics mechanism is to turn them down or turn them off. So they can be turned down or off, and they can be done almost immediately without waiting around for evolution to do the work for us.
I like your words at the end of the foreword in the book. You said we can rewrite our destiny, or Bruce Lipton is the one that made that statement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You talk in the first, and part of your introduction, about how much media influences our thinking, and I concur. There are all of these things that are promoted through media, and they say, gee, if you have beer in a bottle that it's green and has this look on the front of it, boy, you're going to be absolutely happy. The world's going to be perfect for you. Or they'll say, you've got to look this way. You've got to dress this way. All of these things. This is nothing new. This has been a part of what I call the environment of life for a long, long, long time, because we're all subjected to this no matter what our cultural background is. On one level or another, this is going to be coming down. But you ask some interesting questions. You ask the question, can you buy true happiness? And mine is, you can't buy it. That's mine. Are you biologically wired for happiness? Let's take that second question. Are we biologically wired for happiness?
Absolutely. You can demonstrate it to yourself anytime. All you have to do is do some spiritual expressions, such as a good deed or compassion to somebody else, and you will feel immediately happy. And that'll happen to all people, all places, and all cultures. And so what that means is that if you do something that your gene demands, you will be rewarded emotionally, and that of course is the way genes enforce their direction.
Mm-hmm.
So we know it's in there. The problem is that we also have other genes that block this expression. I'll refer to them as caveman genes, but basically what they are is survival genes that have to do with competition for resources and power and greed and things of that nature, which is basically what drives our society today. And that particular kind of gene, because it's survival gene, has a hierarchy of priority. That gene takes priority over the higher level genes, such as the spiritual genes. So that's the issue, and that's why we're not more spiritual and compassionate, and why we are more violent. So what to do, and that's where epigenetics come in, if we can find a way to turn off or turn down those survival genes, then our natural spiritual genes will come to the surface more frequently than they do now.
You bring out a number of different studies in your material that are very interesting reading. One of the statements that you make in your book is about the Mayo Clinic in a study that they did, and you say activities you choose intentionally, mindfully, and proactively are likely to improve your baseline happiness for the long haul. Give us a good example about that.
Well, we have there's one study done by Dean Ornish, who had a group of people who went through his program. These are people that had cancer, beginning sites of cancer, and he went through a long program of diet, exercise, and mental exercises, and over a period of time was found that the mental exercises, which is thinking positively, were able to reduce the activity of their cancer and even eliminate it in some cases. This is not that unusual. That's done in most of the major hospitals who have programs for people who have cancer, putting them into something where they're using their mind in ways that affect the growth and diminishing of cancer cells.
Well, that is fascinating because it does have a big impact on that, because every cell, as you mentioned in the
absolutely
book, has its own intelligence, and what we think and how we feel has an impact on all of these cells.
Mm-hmm. But we all have personal experience with something called the placebo effect. And that is a situation that's been well demonstrated. It's the basis of a lot of modern medicine. And what it means is that by using your mind, you have the power to change your biology. And that's done all the time by most of us in different degrees, of course. But that's kind of an epigenetic effect. At least it gives an idea of what we want to do. Now, what we're doing is a little different. We're using it specifically for happiness purposes. And the reason that we're doing that is because, as I say, we're all naturally have the natural genes for happiness, but they're being blocked by caveman-type genes, so we need to turn off or turn down those genes so that we think more compassionately and less getting things.
You talk also in your book about victim chemistry. And this really hit home, and I was immediately put in the mind frame with a particular client that I've known for a number of years. And the statement in your book is, when we believe that we're powerless victims, that victim chemistry is released into our bodies. We've got a low immune system, a low immune response, and our body may not be as strong and as resilient. This is something that I have seen over and over again. And that is really a challenge for someone to be able to shift out of that, because you are sort of hardwired when you adopt certain thinking processes and there is that victim mentality. What would you recommend to someone that might be listening right now that would say, oh, I just can't seem to help it. It's just what I go through, and I'm so tired of it. I just would love to be able to shift it. How can they shift it?
I think our first step is to get in touch with our mind, because unless you have some means of changing your mind, there is no choice. You can't do anything to change your state. So it's all on our minds, and I'm sure you know, we have divided minds, and unfortunately, the bigger part of it is our unconscious mind, where resides our survival genes and instincts and habits that prevent us having happiness, and happiness is in our consciousness. So that's what we feel is the reason for violence and negativism in the world today, is the fact that we're basically controlled unconscious by our unconscious mind. So the project, or the direction that we're taking, is to increase our conscious mind so that you can do something with your mind to change your biology. While you're in the unconscious state, you have no choice. There's nothing you can do because you're not in control. You're an automatic, and you're being driven by your unconscious mind, which has all these basic instincts along with your life experiences. And I think people, once they start reading this, can prove this for themselves. Once you start understanding how your mind works and you start observing it, you'll know the truth. You'll be the proof. You know, that's the way your mind works. And so how we're trying to make changes is we got this program, this 28-day program, which will help us get to a point where we become more conscious and we're not just a bunch of conditional reflexes.
In your material, you talk about a stuffologist, which I had to chuckle. I thought, what a wonderful word to throw out to someone. Are you a stuffologist? What is a stuffologist?
Well, I think that is. I didn't write those words, but my guess that is somebody that wants to gather things. And that's what we're all about. We're all trying to get things. Things and pleasures. Because we think that's the common definition of happiness, which, of course, is not true. That kind of happiness is conditioned on positive conditions and what's surrounding circumstances, which always change. So what's a pleasure today could be a pain tomorrow. And things never make you happy. They can't make you happy, perhaps for more than a few milliseconds, and then it's gone. And so that's the reason of common happiness, that's the reason why it doesn't satisfy. Now, we're talking about genetic happiness. That's a totally different thing because it always works. It has no conditions under which it won't work. So any time, for instance, you do, using this example of a good deed, if you do it today, it'll work. Tomorrow it'll work. Next week it'll work. Every time you do it, it works. There are no conditions. You could be any place and still have the same results. There you know it's genetic, because it happens to all people, all cultures, at all times. So that's first, the main thing in the book was try to find, describe what is common happiness. That's the thing people think it is, and it has to do with getting happiness through things which can't produce that happiness. And the other kind is genetic happiness, and we all can get that once we do spiritual acts. And so the book then takes a direction of being able to change condition or mindset so that we're more in genetic happiness and less in common happiness.
In your material, you also have a section about the World Happiness Map. And
yeah,
this was a study done in the Netherlands collected from 4,252 national surveys and mm-hmm. 1,220 instruments measuring happiness in 155 different countries. I mean,
yeah.
And this project started in 1993. I don't know. I think it was produced, the results that you have in your book, in 2007. UNESCO was involved with it. The CIA, which fascinated me, the New Economics Foundation, the World Health Organization, and there is the World Database of Happiness, Vinhoven. There's the Latin Barometer, the Afro Barometer, and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was put into this, and the person that originated was Adrian G. White, who was a psychology professor at the University of Leicester in the United States. Kingdom. Now,
mm-hmm.
these are the 20 happiest countries, for those of you listening. And the order, this is number one, Denmark, Switzerland, Austria, Iceland, the Bahamas, Finland, Sweden, Bhutan, Brunei, Canada, Ireland, Luxembourg, Costa Rica, Malta, the Netherlands, Antigua and Barbuda, Malaysia, New Zealand, Norway, and the Seychelles. And the United States rated number 23, China number 82, Japan 90, India 125, the United Kingdom ranks 41 among 178 nations. That is quite a statement.
Yes, I think it demonstrates very basically what we're talking about here. Is that happiness comes from spiritual things, not from material things. You see that the countries that are the happiest are the people that are least materialistic. United States has to be very high in materialism. Some countries that have nothing from a material standpoint are very high in spirituality. They don't go for things to make them happy. They just go for life. They see the spirit in all things around them and in each other. And you can go right down the line and look at the spirituality of each country versus the materialism and draw a line as far as happiness is concerned. Because we're all spiritual beings. It's our nature to be spiritual. And the way we know, the reason we know that, of course, is we can demonstrate it in our genetics and happiness. But if you go back as far as records go and as far as artifacts go, it can be demonstrated that all cultures at all times were spiritual. So spiritualism is our nature. And when we get away from that, which we do with our caveman genes, and turn to materialism, that's the thing that turns the corner from spiritual happiness to what we call as common happiness, which really isn't happiness at all, but it's just instant satisfaction.
You have some wonderful stories about different individuals like Immaculee. And there was a comment on in one chapter on one item. You have got to own your days and name them, each one of them, or else the years go right by, and none of them belong to you. I was talking with someone shortly before the show. I was in the studio recording some things, and I had a conversation with someone, and they said, "It just everything seems to be just going by so fast. Time flies by so fast." And we hear this, I know my listeners have heard me say that over and through many different programs. We live in a time spectrum that seems to be going at a very, very fast rate of speed. Our awareness of how quickly things are going on today and how change is happening so quickly. It's not taking 20 or 30 years. It maybe is taking a week or two in some instances. On certain levels. And being happy is something that nobody can put a patent on. We are all entitled to it. But you talk about utilizing mind management skills. What are some of those skills that we can use?
Well, you made a very good point. Anxiety is very high in materialistic countries because they can't wait to get more stuff, basically. And in countries where they're not after those sort of things, they take more time, they're more leisurely. Those countries in Europe, which we said were happier, are countries that take long vacations. They don't want to work 40 hours a week. It's not important to them to get more stuff as it is for us than other highly industrial countries. But as far as mindsets, changing your mind, that, of course, is the technique of getting it into your body. If you can come up with all the theories and all the wisdom that you think you have and all the things that make common sense, and people may find it very interesting, but if you don't present a way for them to get it into their bodies, it really comes to naught. So therein lies the reason for our 28-day program, and in there it shows the different ways of getting using your mind by using the relaxation response, for instance, which is just the opposite of fight or flight response, and doing some basic meditation, which has been known for a long, long time. And most of the things that we have in a 28-day program have been around for thousands and thousands of years, and some have been more perfected recently, but it's not really that odd or that strange from common techniques. We're just trying to put it in a way so that it's user-friendly and people can do it while they're doing other things, because we know they got to produce some sort of an income. Usually they have a job to go to, they got other requirements, they got family and so forth. They don't really have a whole lot of time to sit down and meditate. If they were like a monk in a monastery, that might be a different thing, but that's not the case. So I tried to make it on a basis that it can be done for 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, 1 minute a day. But the important thing is to get the mindset of how your mind works. That's really the bottom of the whole thing. How does your mind work? What does it do for you? And how can you make some changes in your mind to bring to you these epigenetic changes, to change your biology in the way that you want?
You have the four R's, and this relates to your 28-day program. Week number one is release. Week number two is reboot. Week number three is relax. Week number four is rejoice. Mm-hmm. And just going through a couple of points in week number one for my listeners, because your 28-day program, I don't think, is a difficult program to do at all. But you talk about, you know, deep breathing and just taking a moment. But I loved your my not to-do list. My not, N-O-T, to-do list. And I think that is something we need to make okay, that we don't have to try to be super people. I know women are especially guilty of this, and I raise my hand, and that is you try to be superwomen. You're supposed to do everything and get everything done and run everything perfectly, and you feel guilty if you take a time out. Now, you demand it of your kids, but it's like, why don't you give yourself a time out? It's okay. Go ahead and do that. You also talk about color breathing, which I found interesting. Talk to us about the color breathing, because I think this is significant.
Well, I can't take credit for the program. That's not my forte. Lori is a specialist in that program. She's done many of them. She's aided many people, and she's also practices, and she's been in this field for a long time. So she has huge amount of expertise in what works and what doesn't work, and what works with females, because this book is obviously directed at the female audience who buy 90% of the trade books. Mm-hmm. And just as importantly, the female is much more responsive to taking care. They're caretakers. This is not the kind of book a man's going to get too excited about. Because the men with their caveman genes are really some of the basic problem with the violence we have today. So I see coming out of this, we have to appeal to the female mind and increasing their consciousness. This may sound strange coming from a male, but I think that's the way it is.
And I think your point is well taken, because usually it is the female that will announce to her family, excuse me, but you're going to get better nutrition. You are going to learn these things because you need to take better care of yourself. So, or I need to do this for me, and then the family will sort of follow suit. It's amazing how the women frequently are the forerunners on many areas of change, and I agree with you. I think women would be very, very comfortable with this book, but I think also there might be some of those men out there that would be interested in this, because I think men on certain levels now are becoming aware. They're beginning to think differently. It's been a tough process. It's not an easy thing to do, because you're correct. Men are of a different mindset. They have been indoctrinated in a way, like you described so aptly, the caveman mentality, or me, Tarzan, you, Jane type of stuff. And they're realizing that that modality is not going to serve them well if they want to have long, healthy, productive lives. And I think the men have had such a difficult time with adjustment. And this is an excellent book. So, gals, if you get it, you know, share it with your husband. Share it with your boyfriend. Share it
That's
with
a good
the
point.
Guys. Share it with the guys, because they need to know this. So many men are having a challenge because the world that they were told that they were going to be a part of, it isn't. It's disappearing. It's changing.
Yeah.
And I really think that this is very good. I know we're just about out of time, but I love this story in here. You talk about a cellist who, during the Bosnian War, played music in the town square. And in the background, you could hear machine guns and bombs going off. Yet he played in that town square every single day at the same time in the same place. Now, he didn't do this for just for a week or so. He did it for years. And people would ask him why. This was his answer. Because the world needs music more than anything. And in this book, you and Lori say, find your music, the song that wells up when you're living your heart out, and sing it any way you can. We need to hear you. I love those words. Now, I know we're just about out of time here. Dr. Baird, your website is happinessgenes.com, happinessgenes.com, and people can go there and find out more about you. This book really is a book that is a hands-on book, and it's got a lot of thoughtful information. Great conversation at a party. If you get stuck with nothing to say, you could bring this one up and rattle some people's mental cage. But I'll tell you what, it's good information, and it's soundly based. And why not be happy? Dr. Baird, I want to thank you for being my guest today.
Well, thank you. It's been wonderful talking to you.
This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, happinessgenes.com. We are taking a break. We're going to be right back with you. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the worldwide toll-free number of 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then you just sit back and relax and let me tell you what I perceive. And by the way, I do like to know where you're calling from as well. And then after I finish, you're welcome to ask me a question that is of importance to you. And I'll be glad to give you my insights on that. So, 888-815-9756. Now, I do want to let you know that on Sunday, the 27th, I'm going to be doing an interview with Denise Barnes, who is the host of the talk show Differences out of Nashville, Tennessee. That is going to be at 3:30 Pacific time, and it's with WVOL 1470. And, of course, you can go to WVOL1470.com, listen to it live. And Denise and I will be chatting for a little bit of time, and we will be sharing some information there, and then she has also invited me back to her show again. So I'm going to be coming up with some other programs as well, and as soon as I find out where else I'm going to be doing a show, I will be letting you know so you can share it with your friends and they can tune in if they so desire. But in the interim, give me a call if you like at 888-815-9756, and don't forget, if you have had a unique paranormal experience, I want to hear from you. Why? I'm putting together a book that has 100 stories that will be featured in it, and yours could be in that publication. So if you had an out-of-body experience or something that was very profound and meaningful to you, won't you send me your story? Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com, and that's the whole word. Send that to me, and be sure to put in the subject line for Donna's book or the equivalent of that so that I'll know what it's relating to. I believe that your story could have an impact on someone that maybe is going through experiences of their own, and that's why I'm wanting to put this book together. So my goal is to collect 100 of those stories, and I'd like for yours to be among that 100. So again, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Also, if you are an author and you are someone that would like to be featured on the show, remember, I need to have a copy of your publication, a copy of your book, along with a press release. Send that to me at P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. Send it to the Donna Sebo Show, and then I will be glad to review it. You need to allow 6 to 8 weeks for a review because I'm usually 2 months out in booking for my show. So keep in mind that if you are an author and you would like to be on the show, that is something that you will do. Okay, are you a clutterbug? Are you a person that in your environment, maybe you're super organized? Well, I just love it when I come across studies. And with all of the thinking people on the planet, I guarantee you there's a study on just about anything and everything. And Sam Gosling did a study on what our stuff says about us. What kind of stuff? What about family photos or knickknacks? Plants? Or maybe you're eclectic and you collect everything. Well, he says that how your environment is tells a lot about you. So I wanted to share that with you. If you are one of these super organized people, believe me, I am not a super organized person. Every time I think I'm getting there, I don't know what. I either take a day off or something happens and I've got a gazillion pieces of paper or magazines up the gazoo, or I get in 25 to 35 books all at one time. So I can guarantee you, I am not a super organized person. But if you are, if you're one of these people that has everything has its place and everything is in its place, well, you are focused. Do you know if everything is so spick and span, it means you really have some traditional values too. Now, you obviously won't have a lot of decorative or trendy stuff, which means you're very grounded and you have a very strong attitude about what your beliefs are. Now, if you are a person who has a super duper neat environment, but somebody opens the drawers and they go, oh my goodness, how do you ever find anything in these drawers? Well, that means that you've got an intellectual side. It also means that you are really not as much a neatness as you like to promote yourself to be. Now, what if you are a person that loves family photos? Have you ever seen someone's desk or environment where they've got family photos all over the place? Well, you are warm, you're friendly, obviously family-oriented, but you just really have a very good attitude about life. You have this attitude for success. And having smiling faces around you really supports you in the right way. Family photos, good memories, and that's what you put in your environment. You want to keep yourself. It really relates to my guest today. You want to have that sense of happiness around you. It just makes you feel good every time you look at it. That's very important. Now, what if someone's working environment looks like a greenhouse? Have you ever known anybody in an office where they have ivory draping over the wall or something here? They love to have their plants around them. They need them near the computer. Well, first of all, they are really health-oriented as far as I'm concerned, because having plants in an environment where you have a lot of electrical energy, a lot of equipment is so good because they soak up all of that energy that otherwise can be very depleting for we human beings. Now, by golly, if you like plants, you are a hardworking person and you're dedicated. Those people they found in their surveys that keep plants on their desk are very committed, and they are someone that loves their home life. They're a nurturing type of a person, and it means that your surroundings, your work, you give it attention and care. You are someone that people can enjoy being around. Now, if what if you're one of these people that has a lot of knickknacks, cute little items, it shows what your hobbies are, it just may be whimsical, it shows your good sense of humor, well, they really tell a lot about you and your attitudes about life. Colorful figurines, cute, you know, whatever, put people at ease. In fact, it often will cause people to smile. Have you ever noticed how somebody has a cute little teddy bear? They go, oh, isn't that cute? It automatically, you're the type of person that puts people at ease very easily, and you're probably a very good listener. You're willing to put other people's feelings ahead of your own, and you don't mind listening. You don't necessarily give your opinion, but you are a good listener. And you like to explore different things, and you often have a much broader perspective of life. Now, what if you're one of these people, when someone walks into your space, they go, how in the world can you work in this environment? You have all kinds of things. You have books. You have so many different things, and have you ever heard the term messing to impress? Now, I know we've always heard about dressing to impress, but messing to impress? Mm-mm. You know what? I didn't believe that that was such a thing. But there is. According to research, it reveals that keeping a variety of books or papers spanning an array of subjects sends subconscious signals that you're open to change. When you have a lot of stuff, a lot of debris on a desk, you've got a quick, creative brain, and you do get bored quickly. You prefer a lot of variety in your life. And for those of you that like to keep candy on your desk, I once knew a gal. In fact, I bought for her a special candy container. She kept that filled with M&Ms and all kinds of goodies because people just would come in and they'd come by, they'd stop, they'd chat. Well, guess what? If you're one of those people that keeps a bowl of sweets on your desk, you're sending signals that you're extroverted. You like people to visit, and you like to chat. You just are one of these people that would be a natural person for the hospitality industry or interacting with individuals on a very personal way. So that just gives you some perspectives about different things and how maybe you can, the next time you see somebody's environment, you can look at them a little bit differently, but it's fun. One of the things that I have found so interesting, when you're around people and you observe their environments, you really can get an insight into who they are. It doesn't take long. And many times when you go into people's environments, you'll find that they have different things in different places. They may have a very orderly environment, let's say in the bedrooms or in the bathrooms, but maybe their office is just total chaos. Or it might be just the reverse. You just never know. It's fascinating and it's fun. People watching and observing people in their environments, it can be challenging and it can really be insightful. Gals, believe me, you're around guys, and if you notice that when you walk into their place, they have got dirty dishes stacked up to the ceiling. Trust me, if you decide you're going to marry them, have 4 automatic dishwashers handy so you never have to do anything, and you can keep them going all the time because they're not going to change after you get married to them. It is amazing, and it's something, too, if somebody's in a real extreme neatnik. I'll never forget a gal who married what she called Mr. Clean. Drove her nuts. This guy could never be satisfied. Nothing was ever clean enough. I said, well, it's very simple. Just hand him the Clorox and whatever he needs and tell him to have a good time and keep himself busy. Ah, yes, life is interesting. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Dr. Berkson about a nutritional supplement you need to know about. Why? Because it is something that our bodies make automatically, but after a certain age, our chemistry factories are not working as efficiently, so having it as a supplement makes a difference. It's called ALA, alpha-lipoic acid. This is the book about the ALA breakthrough. Dr. Berkson's going to be my guest. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking about going to college. Bob Newman has a wonderful publication, Are You Ready for College? Boy, it sure is different than it was just a few years ago, and it's becoming more challenging for those that really want to have a degree. So we're going to find out what you can do. And then on Friday, we are going to be going into the wild, the weird, the unusual, with a wonderful man that I've known for years. His name is Bill Nolan. He is the author of Logan's Run, which is a sci-fi cult classic today. He's put out a book called Bleeding Edge. This man is amazing with his writing career, and we're going to be talking about some really interesting things. But Bill's going to be on Friday, so I invite you to join us. And be sure you tell your family and friends about the show as well, because the more, the merrier. This is Donna Siebel. I know we're taking a break here. We're going to be back in just a moment. Give me a call if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-815-9756. Oh, you might want to have a pad of paper and pen handy if you'd like to get a recipe. If I have enough time, I'll be sharing one with you. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Siebel. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Siebel's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Siebel's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Siebel and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I wanted to share something with you. Here we are, summertime. Yo, official day of summer earlier this week. Yoo-hoo, ready for that. Okay, yeah, here in Washington, the sun finally decided to come out. And I was talking with someone in Tennessee late this morning, and they were saying they were dying because of the heat. And I sent them an email after we had finished our conversation saying, well, you might be dying from the heat, but here we're in the upper 50s, low 60s, but it's supposed to warm up all the way to the 70s. And then the sun comes out and the thermostat goes up. We're supposed to have 2 days of sunshine. Woo! I don't know that we're going to know what to do with it. It's just absolutely exciting. This is a cute story that I really enjoyed. There was a company that was conducting free body mass index checkups. Yes, yes, summertime. Gotta want to do that. When a stout colleague climbed onto the machine, it spit out a slip of paper telling him what his weight-to-height ratio was and what it ought to be. Don't we all just love to know those? So this associate asked him, what does it say? And his reply was, I need to increase my height by 6 inches. Well, yes, okay. Well, we'll pass that one by. Now, let's go back to 1983, and let's go back to May 22nd in that year. We're going to be traveling also to Dorset, England. There is a farmer, Simon Drake, who was out in his fields. He had planted barley, and he found gold. Mm-hmm, that's right. Simon discovered a legendary treasure he had been looking for years. He had gotten interested in finding this treasure when he was a young kid, and in his field, he had just recently plowed it up. There was a partially uncovered gold coin that was reflecting the sunlight. Now, over the next few months in 1983, he took a metal detector going into this area where he found the one coin. He managed to unearth 100 coins in the very same field. They were more of nobles and half-nobles from the 15th century. Now, this is the time of the English monarchs Henry V, Henry VI, and Edward III. They were in perfect condition. Why? Because they had been buried in a pottery container that when his plow had gone through this particular section of earth, it had broken the container. And that's how the coins got scattered. Now, in May 1985, 95 of the 100 coins of this treasure trove were auctioned off at Christie's in London for $100,000. Now, in 1942, we're stepping back a little bit, there was another British farmer who discovered treasure while he was plowing his fields in Mildenhall, England. Just like with Simon, his plow also had struck and gotten stuck into a metal object. What it ended up being was the first of 34 pieces of a hoard of Roman silver that dated from A.D. 370. They guessed that it had been buried to be kept safe from Saxons, who during that period were doing raids consistently, and nobody ever found it. People may have been killed off. Now, the man that discovered this, his name is Gordon Butcher, he had been hired by the owner of the farming land, and the owner's name was Sidney Ford. Now, for 4 years, Ford kept this treasure to himself until a local doctor happened to see it, and then the doctor reported the find. Now, the prize piece among the silver that was discovered was the Great Plate of Bacchus. Now, this was big because it measured 18 inches in diameter and weighed 20 pounds. And the relief that had been done on this piece of silver depicted a drinking match between Hercules and the god of debauchery. And this treasure was turned over to the British Museum with the exception of one silver goblet. Now, the silver goblet was 5 inches high with exceptionally intricate decoration, and four legs were a part of this goblet. And this goblet disappeared, and they've never found it. I wonder if the farmer managed to keep it, and maybe it's in a family somewhere. Do you ever watch any of these antique roadshows? I love them, and I especially love the ones that come from London or from England. They travel all over through England and are, you know, have the shows in different castles. And many times, things that had disappeared, could be hundreds of years ago, all of a sudden turn up. Somehow in a family, there is this treasure that's passed down. Nobody knows where it came from. Really interesting stuff. So, you never know. You can be out in the field somewhere, discover a pot of gold or a pot of silver. Nothing is impossible in life. Unexpected? That it may be. Impossible? No. Well, I do know that we don't have enough time for me to give you the recipe. I do want to remind you, tomorrow we're going to be talking about ALA. This is a nutrient. It's very important you become educated about it because it will make a difference in your life and in your wellness. And it's a part of our nutritional supplementation in the SIBO household, and I think you should be aware of it so you become educated about it. And it's not just from Dr. Berkson. I've gotten this information from a number of other people. We're out of time here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy your life. Live it to the fullest. This is your moment now. Be mindfully present and attentive, and joy can be a part of your life. Remember, it's all up to you. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.